judgmental person I know.
Oh.
That's all right. You have a good morning.
Thank you, love.
Good to hear from you.
Bye now.
It's at 25 past 12. Let's talk to Craig Isherwood from the CEC. Good morning, Craig.
Yeah, morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm going to crank my photocopier up. Print more money. There you go.
Well, you can try, but I think you'll get caught pretty quick.
Well, probably.
I was told that we have a very large photocopier as part of our organisation. It's one of the biggest in the world, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it's a printing machine that we produce our literature with, and I suggested one time to the technicians, oh, we could just print money, and said, oh, well, actually you can't, because the colour, the blues, I think it is, in the inks, are actually got micro dots on them. They put on a microscope, and they actually code, they're actually coded so they know where that machine is. In fact, if that part that produces that blue on your printing is damaged, they have to recode, actually go to Japan to get the part recoded.
Serious? Now, is this regular run-of-the-mill photocopiers or the big puppies?
I think any photocopier, colour photocopier at all, is apparently coded with these things.
How about that?
Directly again, that's what I was told by a technician. Now, I don't believe it's blew my leg because there's no need to.
Yeah, it's kind of like the VIN number for your engine, your car engine,
yeah.
I suppose. So, there you go. Don't go printing the money, people. Mind you, if someone hands you a photocopied $50 note, Craig,
with the Australian plastic note, it's a bit hard to get the plastic
off. Yeah, it's not quite the same anymore.
It wouldn't make any difference, Jeff. I mean, the lady that was speaking was wrong. The pensions aren't paid from printing money. I mean, the actual money supply itself, the notes and coins, are a very, very small part of the overall economy.
I wonder how they decide how much to have in circulation.
Well, I think you have to go back to the period of the global financial crisis. There was a big panic on, and a lot of people started pulling their money out of the banks because they weren't sure about what happened with the banks.
They started hoarding, don't they?
They started hoarding, and the banks actually ran out of $100 bills, and then $50 bills got very scarce. And the Reserve Bank printed about, I think it was something like $12 billion in notes or some huge amount of money. And then, of course, after Kevin Rudd put his guarantee on, the money, people said, oh, it's okay now. So the money started to come back in. So it was withdrawn back out of the system. So the money supply can fluctuate. But when it comes to paying pensions and that sort of thing, that comes out of the consolidated revenue or the general revenue of the government. And that's where the Henry Report or this taxation on super tax on mining profits.
Yeah, the big fat tax.
Yeah, that's all part of Kevin Rudd trying to balance his budget and balance the deficit that he's spent this $90-100 billion or whatever it is.
That's probably part of it. At the same time, don't you think they've been making a squillion dollars and having a fairly easy ride at the same time up until now? Really? I mean, it's not a renewable resource. Like, you dig it up once, they make a lot of money, and then leave us a hole in the ground.
Our policy, Jeff, is simply we should have nationalised the whole resources industry years ago. Gough Whitlam tried to do that by what's called the Buy Back the Farm program, and he was going overseas to try and get the money to actually do that. And that was a Ken Lani affair, and it all blew up because he actually he was trying to go out the back door as opposed to the British financiers that have been financing Australia for the 200 years before that. But he said that back then, foreigners do Australians the honour of employing them to dig up our own wealth to be exported overseas.
Mm.
The whole of our production potential, for example, in aluminium, is controlled by overseas interests. Almost all the new areas of iron ore riches or iron ore discoveries, particularly in West Australia, have been taken out of our control. All the new coal deposits in Queensland are controllable overseas interests. And he basically said back in 75 that we were just exporting our raw materials at pennies in the dollar, just absolutely giving it away. Well, the return, I heard the figures, 50% of is now the profit margin on the sale of these raw materials, particularly iron ore, and you're getting into a monopoly situation where you've only got three iron ore companies that control 70% of the market, and of course, this is an oligopoly, which is three companies, and there's a move right now to merge Rio Tinto and BHP in the Pilbara to make it the biggest mine in the world.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Which means they're going to be able to force the price of steel up by forcing the price of iron ore up because they have effective monopoly.
So is it a bad thing to hit them with a massive, great big tax?
No, not at all. I mean, the fact is that this is a looting operation, and it's destroying. you know, they say, oh, but the Australian jobs will be affected. Yeah, well, listen, that's a load of rubbish. I mean, we could have our own nationalised or 100% Australian-owned, you know, iron ore company that could be developing those resources for future generations.
How do you realistically nationalise a private enterprise of such scale? Like, you think $42 billion to buy, you know, to bail us out of the GFC was big money. What would it cost to buy this out of private hands and have the government run it?
Well, it'd be the same procedure that Ben Chifley tried to, he was going to nationalise the banks in 47, 48, and he was offering them a standard share price funded through the Commonwealth Bank for the value of their shares, and he would take over the liabilities. And you do the same thing in terms of the resource companies. You offer them a price and say, they take it or leave it and get out.
Now, Craig, I don't know whether you've been watching the news, but the government doesn't seem to be very good at running things, you know, insulation, things like that. How do you think they'd go at running these mining operations?
Well, you've got plenty of expertise. It's not a question of the government running it per se. It's a matter of setting up the necessary structures and having experienced people go in there and do it.
Right.
It was done during the war. I mean, for example, the whole war was prosecuted by the then head of BHP, Essington Lewis. He was brought in by the Curtin, actually it was the Menzies government before Curtin. He was brought in and he ran the whole munitions side of the prosecution of the war. So you have these experts, you have these people, they're Australians. They're not, you know, they're Australian people with talent, with ability that can do these sorts of things. Under the current regime of international monetarism and what we've had with this idea of globalisation, you're not going to get any moves to actually have companies that act in the sovereign national interest. I mean, just take the gas, for example, and the oil and gas in this country. It was leaked by a guy by the name of Mike Yeager, who's a chief executive of BHP Billiton, on May 2008. He says, right now we're sitting at $5 production price per barrel for oil, and that would translate by our figures to 25 cents per litre for petrol.
Mm.
Now, the current world price is $80, and the production price is $5. Do the math. That's the margin of profit that the International Petroleum Cartel is getting from oil. Now, the other thing is that in Australia...
How much oil do we have, though? We don't have a lot of oil.
We have an enormous amount. There's something like 8,000 untapped, 8,000 wells have been drilled in many offshore basins have never been tested for oil. We have an enormous amount of oil, but what's interesting is that in 2000...
Sorry, just before you carry on, what is that basically just to meter out the supply, just keep the price up? Is that, you know, that sort
of... Well, what it is an international oil cartel that dominates. It's only a handful of oil companies in reality. The big ones like BP, and you've got Shell Oil and various, some of the big American ones, but they're actually not American. They're so interlinked now. It's actually like an organisation of... it's a cartel. They control the world price, and you have the spot market in terms of derivatives and futures trading governing the world price. Like, you take a shipload of oil that leaves the Middle East oil fields, that oil might have been sold 50 or 60 times on the spot market before it finally gets delivered.
Right, okay.
It's a complete gambling casino in this particular economy, in this particular commodity, and that's actually the nature of the global financial system now. It's very, it's dominated by speculation.
Is your dream, the end game would be to have everything, like us as a little, well, we are an island, but a little island economically, running everything ourselves and totally independent of any other country or cartel, international sort of setup.
No, Jeff. That's the slander that we obviously or quite often said. You know, the isolation or the iron gate mentality. Not at all. What you have to have is you actually have to have a community of nation states that are sovereign with as far as their internal running is concerned. They have their own banking system, which we used to have in this country called the Commonwealth Bank. But you have a commitment for the development of your nation as a sovereign entity. But you also allow the other people, other countries, to have that sovereign right as well, so that you represent the culturally distinct nature of each individual country, and you trade accordingly.
I don't know really what that means. Like when we're respecting everyone's individual nation-stateness, And what does that actually translate to in the real world?
Well, it means you don't have globalisation, where you basically have multinational corporations that break down the barriers of national barriers.
Right.
And
So a company cannot own assets in another country, is that what you're
saying? Well, at the moment, we can't own assets in various certain countries like Japan. You can't own a property in Japan. I believe that's the case. You can't own certain assets in Japan. Yeah, countries do have the right to say you shall not own certain property. We have a big problem right now is that there's a lot of overseas money coming in buying domestic properties for rental.
Well, they've changed that, though. Didn't they change
that?
Well,
they're talking about changing. It hasn't changed yet.
Mm.
But, I mean, that's inflating the price of houses where you've got a lot of people speculating on the real estate boom right now.
Mm.
So the idea of sovereignty, Jeff, is that you say we are a country of people that are the government's role, the lawful role of government, is to protect the interests of this people in this geographical place called Australia.
You'd hope so.
Well, that's the problem with globalisation, is it doesn't work like that. Our government, our parliamentary system, is in the beholden of large multinational corporations. And
obviously not so much if they're quite happy to give them. They can't be that scared if they say, look, we're going to whack you with a 40% tax.
The head of Newcrest Mining came out and says, well, listen, you can do that if you want. It's only going to hurt us, our value, by 5%.
Right.
Doesn't mean they're not going to fight it, but they know damn well that their profits are so massive.
Oh, yeah.
But they're going to still make a huge amount out of this because, and that's if it gets through, because, I mean, they've got the Tony Abbott in the wings there. The Liberals are always a friend to big business, so they might block or fight or change it. Who knows? There's a long way to go yet, but the intention of, we say, nationalise it or bring it down to more than 100% Australian owned, run by for the interest of Australia. We should have done that ages ago, like Whitlam was proposing.
Mm.
And there's a way to fund this sort of stuff.
So you would block foreign ownership of almost any, well, basically every single Australian company. Every single Australian company needs to be owned by an Australian.
Or majority owned, or 60% owned, depending on the strategic nature.
Right.
And it depends on the sorts of cooperative agreements we have with other countries,
isn't that the deal though? Now though, I mean, you look at Optus, which is technically Australian owned, but it's like 51-49 sort of jobby. It's very line ball, but still technically in Australian hands. I mean, is that what you're talking about?
Well, in certain strategic industries, you would have the increase of Australian ownership up to 100%.
Right.
Right. Telecommunications. Could be one of those, I'm not sure. But in terms of, look at Rio Tinto, for example, 70% foreign owned, and that the 70% of the profits leave to go overseas, right?
Hmm.
And we're just saying that's not in the interest of the country.
Well, if you say if 70% of the profits, like when you actually say 70% of the profits, the lion's share of the profits would go into the shareholders, wouldn't they? And those shareholders, they'd be, as an Australian company, they'd be Australian shares, wouldn't they?
How do you
control, say, who owns the shares?
Well, in terms of Rio Tinto, one of the largest institutional shareholders is the Queen.
Right.
Right, and a lot of Rio Tinto is a large multinational foreign-owned company. Therefore, a lot of the shareholders are actually based in other countries. They're not in Australia. There is a certain amount of shareholding in Australia, sure, but that doesn't excuse the fact that a lot of money goes offshore. That's also one of the reasons you see these interest rate rises coming into Australia all the time is because our base rate's 4.25% now. It's one of the highest in the world. So we have to keep that rising in order to attract capital.
I thought it was to slow down inflation and house prices.
that's always the argument. But the fact is we have a huge public and private debt of over $1 trillion. And also we have the banks in this country owe about $825 billion in overseas monies, and they have to turn over that. And about $425 billion of that is to be turned over every 90 days. So they have to attract the capital into the country. Otherwise, we're going to suffer massive capital shortages. So therefore, the interest rates have to be kept higher. Right now, the interest rate in Brazil is 9.25%.
Wow. Gee.
Yeah, that's the Brazilian carry trade. So what's taking place, you can get money from Canada or America, usually America at 0.25% or in Japan at 0.1%, get that money converted into Brazilian real, buy Brazilian bonds with that, with the depreciation just in the last 6 or 8 months on the Brazilian real, plus the combined return on your bonds, you're making something like 35%.
Right. So now, why aren't I part of this racket, Craig? I mean,
oh, you haven't got enough money, Jeff.
That's the thing I'm always upset about. Hey, Craig, we'll need to leave it there. How can people find out more?
Oh, there's a lot of material on our website, Jeff. We go through this historical data. It's www.cecaust.com.au. Or if people want to give us a call on 1-800-636-432, we're happy to send out our newspapers. We've got a special one called the Syneky News Citizen that goes through the history of what I was talking about with the idea of buying back the farm.
Okay, terrific. Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. I'll catch you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Cheers, mate. Good talking to you. The open line is...